हरिः ओम्
The Lord was pacified after killing those kings who were burdensome to the earth. They were puffed up with their military strength, their horses, elephants, chariots, infantry, etc. He himself was not a party in the fight. He simply created hostility between the powerful administrators as they fought amongst themselves. He was like the wind which causes friction between bamboos and so sparks of fire. 34. Srila Prabhupada explains, as stated above, the living beings are not factual enjoyers of things which are manifest as God's creation. The Lord is the genuine proprietor and enjoyer of everything manifest in his creation. Unfortunately, influenced by the deluding energy, the living being becomes a false enjoyer under the dictation of the modes of nature. Puffed up by such a false sense of becoming God, the deluded living entity increases his material strength. So by so many activities, and thus becomes the burden of the earth, so much so that the earth becomes completely uninhabitable by the same. Right. So it's because they have all these facilities, as we were discussing before, the material mentality means you think the facilities are the, how you say, enjoyment. Right? It's not that anybody ever enjoys here. Right, there's moments here and there just to keep up the illusion. But the factual is because of things we think I am enjoying. Right, I have a nice house, therefore I must be happy. Right, you know, and that's always the shock is everybody has everything, and then at one point they go, I have everything, and I'm still not happy. Right. Right, and then you know they have all kinds of terms for this situation, you know, midlife crisis, this, that, blah, so many things. But the point is that it's the idea that things will make me happy. That's the difference. That's why we see here in the Bhagavatam the focus is always on the personality of Godhead, because that's actually where the happiness lies, is interaction with others.
Yes.
Right. And so this interaction with others is based on them as individuals, not because of the other connection. Because we may say, no, but I deal with my family and friends as people. Yes, but it's I deal with my family and friends, underlined, quotation mark, as people. You understand? Not I'm dealing with people. They may happen to be family and friends. You understand? So it's still... you're nice with your paraphernalia. Yeah. You know, you're responsible. You take care of it. Many don't.
Yes.
Right? They have a car. How many people take care of their car? Right? Really? Change the tires, oils, everything when they're supposed to? Very few. Some do. And if they do, it's always commented on. Not like everybody has, you know, their car's in good shape, perfect shape. That's normal. If someone's a little out of shape, then the guys say, hey, this guy's not taking care of his car. No. If somebody takes care of the car, they go, wow, this guy takes care of his car.
Yeah.
You understand? So it's rare. That's why people don't deal nicely with others. So that's the material concept. That's what we're learning is the association of sadhus. That's the real thing, right? Being in the association of devotees. That's the real crux. So it's a matter of their people. Krishna is a person, their people. That's what it's all about. So here, the kings, they get puffed up with the military strength, horses, elephants, chariots, infantry, etc. Right? Their position, this and that. The demigods also. It mentions the Brahma Samhita. Right? That they're offering prayers. Right? All these shuktas that we see in the Vedas. To the Lord, so that they can maintain their position in the heavenly planets. Right? The same thing. Their position, their facilities, their chariots, their all these different things. Does that make sense? So this is the material mentality. It's about the facility. And then I will enjoy this facility.
Yes.
Right? So the mistake is we're thinking this is masculine. Because Krishna, it's not about the facility. He is the facility. Right? We say, oh, hey, I got this and that. But it's different from you. Because your energy. And this is another energy. But Krishna being the energy, it is Him. So it's not about the facility, it's about interaction. He is the facility. He can sit all day with all the facility in the cosmos.
Yes.
Right? It's Him. It's not that He's lacking something. He's not thinking, wow, I really wish, you know, I don't know, it's a bit wild, but, you know, do you think I should go for the, you know, like a, what do you call it? Aqua blue Bentley? You know, he doesn't have to do that. He's everything.
He doesn't care for the color.
Doesn't care for the color, yeah. He's got, no, it's not that he doesn't. He has all the colors. He is all the colors. He's the effect you get from looking at the colors. Right? You know, it means, does that make sense? That's the thing. He is everything. Yeah. Just like we identify with our stuff. This is my car. It's me. Hey, you hit me. Why are you hitting me? But the thing is it's not me. But with Krishna, it is me. So he doesn't have to worry about that. He worries about the people. So therefore, the prayojana is where his focus is. We talk about the prayojana, but our focus is on sambandha. Why? Because we're energy. Where does energy look? Energy is opulence. It looks at stableness. Krishna's stableness. He looks at opulence. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
So we think it's masculine because we think it's our stuff, so we think we're in the masculine.
Yes.
And actually it's Krishna, so we're in the feminine.
Yes, so we're still feminine. That's the whole point. So the reason we go about it is still from the feminine point of view, but at the same time as we're trying to take on this masculine point of view. That's why it said material is perverted. Because things aren't the way they are. It's not that, how you say? You know, it's just like you look in the mirror, okay? And you see a face in the mirror, okay? So now, it's not that the face in the mirror is different from the real face. But the difference is here we call it a face, let's say in the material world, we call it a shoe. Right? Or the backside of a bus. I think that's the northern English comparison.
Manchester.
<You know. laughs> She had a face like the back of a bus. Yeah, like that. So we have a different name and our different concept of, and because of that concept, we think it's different. That's the perversion. So we say, I am God, I'm the controller, I'm the joyer, but we're not. That's the perversion. It's not that the forms are different. That's what we get confused. Oh, if we take up devotional service, we have to change the forms. It's not about changing the forms, because that's not the perverted part. It's about changing the attitude, right? Krishna has a mother. Here there's mothers, right? There he has, you know, in Dorky has vehicles. Here they have vehicles, right? He wears clothes there. They wear clothes here, right? They eat food there. They eat food here. The point is it's the mentality that's changed. That's where the perversion comes in. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's what we have to change. So that's what is the problem here. It's not a problem that the kings have this. Yudhishthira also has military strength, horses, elephants, chariots, infantry, but he's not the one that Krishna came to kill. Right? So it's not the facilities. Right? So they're thinking, oh, he's got money. He must be so... Because if we had money, what would we be? Yeah. Yeah, that's the whole point. Yes.
Seems sometimes women are more attached to facility than men.
That's the principle.
So yes. So they
no, but the point is still the man is relaxed about it.
Mm.
See, the woman, it's not the facility aren't hers. It means we're looking at it. You can also switch this. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But the point is that from this perspective, we're looking at it, that facility means it's going to create stability.
Yes.
The stability in what?
Mm-hmm.
In experience.
Yes.
See, women are attached to facility because of what experience you'll get from it. Men are attached to it for what facility, what mechanical efficiency you gain from that facility. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
That's all. So it's a matter of efficiency. Well, for the woman, it's a matter of experience.
So it's one and more.
You understand? Yeah, yeah. So the thing is we're thinking of that if I have this, mm-hmm. then I'll be happy. So what's the focus on?
The thing.
Experience.
Oh, okay.
You understand?
Yeah.
The thing is there for experience,
yeah.
So it's shelter. That's the underlying feminine nature that all jivas have.
Mm-hmm.
Right, then there'll be the masculine thing about it. Now, within that, then, you know, it's more, it works really nicely or it gives a nice experience. Does that make sense?
Okay.
And ultimately, you know, of course, because of Ananda, this is the experience you get from the final thing. So the experience, you know, the happiness you get from it working nicely or operating it nicely. You know, or the happiness gained from it created a very nice, result. You know, in the way of the interaction. Does it make sense? So you have all these functioning at the same time. It's just, in the discussion, it's which one you're focusing on. Because you can take it from the opposite. You know, Krishna is, and his energies are not different. So that's why, as Sankarsha, it's all one. Right? But when he expands the energies, then they appear to be different. Right, so then he's focusing on his energies, but not as facilities, but as people. Because as facilities, they're already him, as Atmarama. As Atmarama, he is the facilities. Right? But when he expands his energy, then it's about rasa. Then he is rasa. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the means these things we get from Bhagavatam here. So that has to be removed, because when that gets too much, then everybody gets distracted. And then it says, the earth becomes completely uninhabitable by the sane.
Yes.
So sane means those who are interested in self-realization. Because you do something self-realization, immediately people are thinking, you know, you're not, you know, enjoying the facilities or trying to get facilities. What's wrong with you?
Yes.
You know? That's the first thing, you know? So it's like if we just, like, let's say, for example, if we say, you know, you're talking to somebody, you know, I mean, just we're taking a generic thing here. Someone's talking to another devotee, and they say, how are your kids doing like that? They must be big now. They must be going to school like that. Yeah, yeah, they're in Gurukul. What's the first question? How are they going to maintain themselves? That's going to be the first question. They're not going to say, oh, that's nice, or devotees, or yeah, yeah, or hey, new temple president. No, not like that. How are they going to maintain themselves? That's going to be the first question. Guaranteed. Right?
Yes.
So what does that mean? Why? Because the association, we're always associating with these big, big demons that think that having all this facility is great. You know? Like, what was that? Howard, was his name Howard Hughes? The guy that had the huge monster airplane?
Yes.
The biggest airplane in the world, right? And they still haven't made one bigger. You know? I mean, he had everything.
Casino.
Huh?
He was running the casino.
Yeah, it's like that. He had it, but he didn't. It just didn't work out for him. It just didn't happen.
Yeah.
So that's the thing, is we have this idea that, no, this will be what is there. That's just the general mentality. So this is what has to be given up, because otherwise it becomes too much. If people are pious, then the general populace tends to be pious. But if the leadership is not, then the tendency is to be materialistic, to go after things. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
That's why we're dealing with an artificial kind of environment. Because it's all about the things, getting more and more and more things. Because someone else wants more and more and more things. But it's not about it's how you use the things, how you interact with people. That takes a lot less stuff. You know what I'm saying? Before you could go like for a walk on the beach or this or that. Now it's about not the walk on the beach, that you're staying in a 5-star hotel that has this, that, the spa, this and that, and it has a beach.
Yeah.
But who's walking on it? Nobody, because they're in the spa, they're in this, they're in that. You understand? So it's changed from these simpler things that didn't really take much to a whole You know what I'm saying? Before, it's like people went up to these, you know, where the beaches are. You know, simple places, not fancy, because it's summertime, they don't have to be nice. Because you're going to spend your time out. You went to the beach to be at the beach. Right? But now, it's like you don't have five-star facilities in that. You know, who's going to the beach? You understand? So it costs so much more endeavors, so much, so it becomes more and more artificial. Right? So that's the... So we become proud of this. Right? The fire in the forest takes place automatically by the force of the air. And similarly, the hostility between different groups of politicians takes place by the unseen design of the Lord. Right? So force of the air. So air is movement. Right? Like that. So that movement, just that they're doing what they do, they'll automatically produce fire between themselves. The unwanted, you know, by the Lord's design, right? It's just how he's made it. The unwanted administrators, puffed up by their false power and military strength, thus become engaged in fighting amongst themselves over ideological conflicts, and so exhaust themselves of all powers. Right? Because you see, at the end of the war, there's not a whole lot left. You know? Like that. You know, I mean, what did Berlin look like after they finished there? Right? You know, it was a big pile of rubble, right? And that was it. So that's the difficulty. It's that it, then everything becomes exhausted. You start from scratch. So, yeah, unwanted administrators. It means wanted administrators don't do this. Unwanted ones do. Right? It's not administrators do this. That's also a mistake. That's another ideology. The Quran is the same thing. Oh, people with power. We don't want people with power. We don't want people with position. You have to get rid of this. Make everybody equal. That's also an ideology. And that's just going to cause the same friction, because then you get together and yell and scream and all that stuff like that. Right? By yell and scream means use capital letters. Right? On Facebook. Right? Okay? So that's it's the same thing. We're talking about, no, you need administrators, you need everything, just like we went through. You need all these different positions in society. There's not none of it's a problem. Yes. The history of the world reflects this factual will of the Lord, and it will continue to be enacted until the living beings are attracted to the service of the Lord. In other words, when everybody's attracted, then they go back to Godhead. There's always those who are not, so it's still going to go on. So here the important point is it will stop for you when you become attracted. Yes. It's not that the world will change and become a better material place. No, it can become a better spiritual place. But a material place is the same old material place. You know, it's not going to get any better. You know? In the Bhagavad Gita, this fact is very vividly described. Bhagavad Gita 7:14. It is said, the deluding energy is my potency, and thus it is not possible for the dependent living beings to supersede the strength of material modes. But those who take shelter of me, the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, can cross over the gigantic ocean of material energy. Right? So in other words, it's atheism that actually comes up, the thing that man-made is going to be better. Man will fix this. Man will make the better world. No, man can cooperate with God and other living entities to make a better world. But there's no such thing as man on his own will make, because we see just in the 60 years of really determined that this is how it's going to be, then it failed. It didn't work. And if we go back before that, when people were thinking that in the late 1800s and stuff like that, they thought, yes, we're putting together, we're doing it, we're going to make a better world. It still didn't. You know, we ended up with World War I, World War II. So it didn't exactly work out so great. You know, like that. And then when you had before that Age of Enlightenment and that, then there's so much struggle and strife there. You know, you just see is that there's this concept, the more they become atheistic, the more it creates trouble. Okay. This means that no one can establish peace and prosperity in the world by fruitive activities or by speculative philosophy. Right? So it's not an endeavor, or it's not an ism that you'll come up with that will cure the problem. Or ideology. The only way is to surrender unto the Supreme Lord and thus become free from the illusion of the deluding entity. So only devotional service can solve the material problems. Nothing else will. Sutta Goswami continued, that Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, out of his causeless mercy, appeared on this planet by his internal potency, and enjoyed himself amongst the confident women as if he were engaged in mundane affairs, as dear as they were to him. Lord Krishna's wives could not fathom his glories, although their beautiful smiles and furtive glances were exciting enough to conquer Cupid, or even Lord Shiva. They could never agitate the senses of the Lord, for he was perfectly detached from his wives' abundant charms. Just something comes up in this, is that it brings out, is that, remember before, they brought up talking about the queens and that interaction, and then they went out into these kings. Right, Vishwanath mentioned this. In order to express the unimpeded nature of his love for the queens, another type of activity lacking that excitement is described next about these kings. So he went talking about the queens and their interaction with the Lord, then went out to these kings, you know, and being destroyed, and then back to this. So the point is the Lord is not attracted by these things. That's what makes him different. Because otherwise one may think, oh, he's attracted by his wives and everything just like we're attracted. No, he's not. He's different. Right? In fact, because to him it's about the rasa. Does that make sense? Yes.
And for them it's not about the rasa?
For them means?
For the wives?
No. The point is it's not because of the feminine charms that is attractive. It's that the devotee is with love expressing that through the feminine charms. Right? That's the point. It's the love that's there, not the medium. It's true. Does that make sense? That's the subtle difference. Is because we tend to put the two together. Means on the spiritual platform you can put the two together, but on the material platform you have to separate because the one basically is useless. That mentality is never used in the spiritual world. Right? That's how we got ourselves here. Right? So. Yes.
How is Krishna able to tell that he is completely detached from you, but still in relationship with there?
It means he doesn't have to compare it to something. He is detachment. We have to remember he is all these qualities we're talking about.
Yes. But how is he able to say and then still there is a relationship?
But he's not saying. Sutta Goswami said.
Oh, okay.
Krishna's us. I mean, he does say himself.
Yeah.
But the point is because it's not about that. It's not about these technical points. It's not because they're my wife, therefore I'm attached. It's that's a medium of expression of love for Krishna, so he reciprocates that. It's not that he needs a wife or he needs a you know, a vehicle or a palace or a kingdom. Right? He doesn't need anything. That's his point. So therefore expression of attraction between the living entities and the Lord, that's what attracts him. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So just like the Paramahamsas on that liberated platform, then they're not attracted by anything material, but they're attracted by the Lord. Right? So in the same way, the Lord, he's the, you know, how you say, the Paramahamsa of Paramahamsas, right? You know, the Paramahamsa's Paramahamsa, right? And he's not, so in the same way, he's not attracted. So it's not about the externals. It's about the expression of love. So when Krishna and Balaram are talking about how beautiful the Vrindavan forest is, they're talking about the expression of love that Yogamaya, Vrindadevi, you know, Bhumi are all doing. Ananga is arranging to make a nice situation for the Lord. So their service is to create situations in which Krishna and the devotees interact. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the part they're appreciating. Not, you know, great tree. No. Yeah, it's just like, let's say you're going in, let's say you went to a forest, right? And, you know, a couple goes to the forest, but one of them happens to be a botanist. So are you really going to be able to enjoy the ambience of the forest? No. Wow, look at that. That's this. It's kind of, yeah, so? It's it. But in other words, it's the focus is too much. Yeah. You know? That's the whole thing. It just gets...
Unless he's also a botanist.
If they're both botanists, then then that's very romantic. Yes. We found together, and it was so rare like that.
All the friends have to see the slides.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Sad to say, but they're all excited. Yeah. So here is it. Yes. Although their beauty. Okay, as dear as they were to him, Lord Krishna's wives could not fathom his glory, because the Shakti cannot understand the Shakti mind. Mm. Right? Now, it's not that Krishna doesn't understand the Shakti. That's not the question. He doesn't understand the love of the Shakti. That's why he came as Lord Chaitanya. You know, it wasn't that, I'm always in this male body, and so what's it like being in a female body,
Experimenting a little bit.
It wasn't that. That's the point. It's the love. But as far as the tattva, there's no bewilderment there. But the Shakti cannot understand fully the tattva of Krishna. So his element that he's there, he's acting as being dominated. Although the beautiful smiles and furtive glances were exciting enough to conquer Cupid, right? Cupid, who conquers everybody, they're above him because they're from the spiritual world. Or even Lord Shiva. They could never agitate the senses of the Lord, for he was perfectly detached from his wife's abundant charms. These simple women thought Krishna as their beloved husband, and since he never seemed to leave their sides, they considered him to be dominated by them. So that's the thing. So that's, they consider him like that, but at the same time he acts in a way that he's detached. So then this is the thing that can't be understood, yes.
Are we saying that, that Shaktiman cannot understand the rasa of the Shakti?
The love. He's always amazed by the love.
Okay.
Like that.
Okay.
a Shakti is always amazed by the, newer and newer qualities that are manifest because of, the ability to control the senses and the ability to be sensitive.
Is that the tattva?
I'm talking about this is there. If those aren't there, then no lady is impressed. You know what I'm saying? To that degree of detachment and sensitivity, to that degree there's impressment,
yes.
Yes. Otherwise, not so impressive.
Not so impressment.
Yes, the impressment becomes less. Now, in the same way as the man by the chastity and the satisfaction is impressed. But in this, you can't have chastity and satisfaction if there's not sense control and sensitivity.
Yes.
So it's not that you'll see the one and not have the other. Mm-hmm. Right?
It starts with the man.
Yes, that's it. Yes.
Why are they called simple ladies?
Simple. What do you want them to be called?
No.
Highly sophisticated, urban,
Go-getters.
Go-getters.
Okay. Yuppies, maybe.
No, like the gopis could be called simple in the context that they are cowgirls.
But the sophisticated, where's the sophistication? You know what I'm saying? Where is it? It's in the mannerisms. It's not in necessarily the person themselves. You know what I'm saying? As long as that nice experience and exchange is there, then that's enough. That's simple. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that the feminine nature is simple. Interact nicely, things are great. Now that interaction may be more sophisticated or more simple, but all it requires is that interaction is there. That makes sense. It's like the guy sitting there and looking at the moving goes, that's not real. That never happens. Right? And the lady's there, if the interaction is nice, then she's, getting all emotional and he's wondering what's going on. And it's just, it's simple. Right? Well, he tends to keep it complicated. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, footnote 23. In spite of his wife's naive assumption that he could be bound by the feminine wiles, Sri Krishna's consorts at Dwarka were no ordinary women. Said simple, not ordinary. Right? in his purport to 1.11.35, because generally we take simple to be simpleton, right? Yeah. No brains, this, that, you know. And complicated or sophisticated mean very intelligent, this and that. There's a difference between ordinary, simple, and sophisticated. Right? They're all different elements. In his purport to 1.11.35, Prabhupada writes, "The women who became the wives of the Lord were certainly not ordinary women, because they get the Lord as one's husband." Because to get the Lord as one's husband is the result of many, many millions of births. Tapasya, austerity. Actually. They are all transcendental liberated souls. Perfect manifestations of internal potency, energy. The Lord does not require anyone's extraneous help for his personal satisfaction. Because he's already self-satisfied. You can increase it, but to be satisfied, he doesn't require. We're doing something, we're not satisfied, we're trying to become satisfied. He's already satisfied. Yes. Does that make sense? Yes. That's why the feminine quality of satisfaction then is important, because he's satisfied, they're satisfied. Then you have a common ground. Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Therefore, the queens could not satisfy the Lord by their feminine attractiveness. But they satisfied him by their sincere affection and service, right? So the feminine attractiveness is the medium for their sincere affection and service. Just like the cowherd boys, it will be that kind of boisterous, you know, interaction. The mothers will be that motherly interaction. Right? Does that make sense? So it's a medium. Only by unalloyed transcendent loving service could they satisfy the Lord. And the Lord was pleased to treat them as wives in reciprocation. Thus, being satisfied by their unalloyed service only, the Lord reciprocated the service just like a devout husband, right? So what is he going to do? How is he going to... They're expressing love. He's going to reciprocate love. Right? That's natural. They're expressing through feminine... what do you call it here? Feminine attractiveness as wives. He's going to reciprocate as controlled husbands. Right? What was the word he used here?
Yeah.
Devout or beloved husbands, like, yeah. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's why that's the medium. So the medium's important because you're going to have to express it, but it's not about the medium. That's our mistake. We think the medium is the what do you call it? It's not the medium's the message. You know, that's the whole problem. Right. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So this is the difficulty, is that it's not about the thing. You require the thing. That's the point. Oh, we either require it or don't require it.
Yes.
You know, yeah. So, if things aren't for the primary, we don't need them at all.
Yes.
Right? That's the difficulty. Yes. Or if we need them, it's all about them.
Yes.
No, you need a medium.
Yes.
Right? Just like if you want to cook a nice meal, you need something to cook with. You know, something to cook. Like, I want to cook a meal for somebody. You're cooking for somebody. So what are you going to do? Then you're going to use ingredients as that medium of the preparation. Does that make sense? And even that's a facility of, you know, service to them by feeding them. And that is also a facility simply just to show express affection. You understand? So that's why it's always that the final goal is Krishna, is prema. Otherwise, everything else's goal is before that. Does that make sense? To serve Krishna, to feed Krishna as a service, you have to cook for Krishna. To cook for Krishna, then you have to make all the arrangements and have a kitchen and have all that facility. To do that, you have to have whatever it is that generates that. So you see, there's so many steps involved, and each one of those has a goal, right? You have, you know, you have the goal of getting land so you can grow vegetables. Now that you have the land, now your goal is to grow the vegetables, right? And then you have the vegetables so you can grow, so that then you can cook them. You're cooking so that you can take care of the family. You're taking care of the family to show that, you know, that service. That service is to please Krishna. Understand? So all goals ultimately end in Krishna. So if they stop anywhere in between, that's where then we make a comment. Right? So the criticism isn't about engaging them. A criticism is you think that's the goal. No, the goal is prema. Right? Okay. Being thus satisfied by the unalloyed service only, the Lord reciprocated the service just like a devout husband. Right? That's the medium. Otherwise, he had no business becoming the husband of so many wives. Right? Because what's the point? He is the husband of everyone. But to one who accepts him as such, he reciprocates. Right? He's the husband of everyone because all Shakti is his. So that means that he's the husband of every living entity. But those who reciprocate like that, it means who deal that way, then he reciprocates that. This unalloyed affection for the Lord is never to be compared to mundane lust. It is purely transcendental. Yes?
Does that mean also the devas can also think that Krishna is our husband?
If that's what you want, then yes. I mean, so we're talking here, this is on the platform of what relationship you're going to serve Krishna as. But the point is ultimately that position of looking for husband, looking for wife, looking for children, looking for, you know, shelter. Krishna is all those. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So from that principle and the philosophical point, he is that anyway because he's the sort. But as rasa, then yeah, you can if you want to end up in Gorkha.
No.
If you like that.
Well,
if you want to go to Vrindavan, then you kind of...
What about Radharani?
Well, she doesn't think like that.
Yeah. No.
She thinks like that, then she's Satyabhama.
Yes.
Right? So it's not that taste isn't there, but it's tasted there. You know, so it's there. Okay. This is the divinity of the personality of Godhead. He is not affected by the qualities of material nature, even though he is in contact with them. Right? Similarly, the devotees who have taken shelter of the Lord, in contact with them, in other words, these actions may be going on, controlled by whatever they're controlled by, but it doesn't bother him. He's connected, he's in contact with them, but it doesn't affect him, because he's the source of them. Similarly, the devotees who have taken shelter of the Lord do not become influenced by the material qualities. 35 to 39, yes.
If Maharaj is not affected by those qualities, because he's the source of everything,
yes.
The devotees who take shelter of him, why wouldn't they be affected by material qualities?
Because they're connected with him, so they're working on the transcendental platform. It means you give up a lower taste for a higher taste.
So you just don't deal with anymore?
Instead it's the, just cheese? Like this. It's a strawberry cheesecake or blueberry cheesecake. Okay? And there's a mud pie. What are you going to take?
It's obvious.
Yes, so then that's the same way. It's obvious. Once you've tasted the spiritual, you don't really, really get into the material anymore. Yeah, that's why Krishna says by tasting a higher taste, you give up the lower. So it's not by just controlling the senses only. It's controlling the senses so you can appreciate the higher taste. It's not controlling the senses and not being Krishna conscious. You know, sometimes we'll take it that control, that's it, but it's just another thing. It's just another facility. You know, I have controlled senses. You know, it's just another thing. But it's a matter of that's engaged in the Lord's service, it becomes useful. When Krishna related to his queens, he reciprocated with their pure affection, which was free of any tinge of the modes of material nature. Although foolish persons may confuse the behavior shared between the Lord and his consorts with mundane sensuality, Srila Prabhupada explains. The path of salvation, or the path going back to Godhead, always forbids the association of women, and the complete Sanatana Dharma, or Varnashram Dharma, scheme forbids or restricts association with women. Right, so salvation forbids it. And then Sanatana Dharma. So here's those Sanatana Dharma or Varnashram Dharma. That means Daiva Varnashram. So Daiva Varnashram, Sanatana Dharma are the same. Sanatana Dharma means your eternal relationship. So what it is your Daiva Varnashram, Sanatana Dharma means that you're engaged in Krishna service, bhakti. But you have to use a medium. Again, we come back to the medium is required. So therefore, then, Varnashram is what's recommended. Right? So it forbids or restricts. Right? So Brahmachari Sannyas is forbidden. Grihastha, it's restricted. Vanaprastha, even more. Does that make sense? So the whole thing is yeah. But how then can one be accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is addicted to more than 16,000 wives? Right? The mental speculators compare everything from the standpoint of experimental knowledge of their own selves. Right? So therefore, it's always about themselves. So that's the difficulty with experiential. It's not that the senses are being engaged is the problem. The problem is they're using your own experiences as the authority. That's the problem with experiential knowledge. As opposed to that you hear from Shabda, then you apply it and get that experience and see the Shabda is correct. That's different. It appears the same, but where the authority lies, that's the difference. So that's why we make comments about experiential. And then people think, oh, then you don't experience. No, we experience, but based on Shabda. Right? Thus, when the Lord is found to act like an ordinary person in matrimonial bondage, they consider him to be like one of them, without considering that the Lord can at once marry 16,000 wives or more. Due to a poor fund of knowledge, they accept one side of the picture while disbelieving the other. That's the problem. They're not accepting both sides. So why would he accept this side? Means because if we're karmis, then we would have to appreciate, okay, he's God, so he could do that, right? You know, means it's hard enough to find one person to marry, you know, or to stay married, right? Now here he's got 16,108, and we don't hear about that there was any problems. You know, we don't hear that. You know, sometimes Narad Muni used to come in because there's some counseling was needed and stuff like that. You know, we don't hear about it, right? He just goes and is amazed by what's going on. Right? So you'd have to, this guy has to be God, right? Who else can marry 16,108 wives? They're all happy. And he's happy, right? Okay. Or from the platform of liberation, then from there, then, now you say, what was the point of Prabhupada made? Yeah, they're only accepting the one side. So they're not seeing that point of liberation. That he's beyond the mode, so therefore he's not. He's just reciprocating. But they're looking at their side of it, that they are, if they're in that position, they would be attached, so therefore the Lord would be attached. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty here.
That's, is that aropia?
Yes, aropia. Aropia, you're just taking what you think and applying it on there. Did we finish this?
No.
Okay.
Due to a poor fund.
Okay, we're up there. Okay, that's what I was thinking. Due to a poor fund of knowledge, they accepted one side of the picture while disbelieving the other. Right? They accept that, you know, okay, he's able to work with the wives and he's that, and so he's powerful, he can do that, but don't accept that he's detached.
Yeah.
Right, so that's a difficult. This means that due to ignorance only, they always think of Lord Krishna like themselves and make their own conclusions, which are absurd and unauthentic from the version of the Bhagavatam. Right, because they'll always come up with some weird application like that. Srila Jiva Goswami writes in his Priti Sandarbha, Anucheda 135, the Supreme Lord may sometimes seem to be lusty in his dealings with his consorts. However, what seems to be lust on his part is actually the purest love. This is seen in the following statement of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.11.25. That Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, out of his causeless mercy appeared on this planet by his internal potency and enjoyed himself amongst competent women as if he were engaged in mundane affairs. Right, so here we see internal potency and competent women. So he's appeared through his internal potency, right? He's enjoying himself through this internal potency, right? So these are the competent women, their internal potency. So it's not at all mundane. It's as if. That's all, because we only know how to look in the mirror. That's why we'll say as if. But where does the original come from? It comes from the spiritual world, right? Does that make sense? Yeah. The Lord does not enjoy pastimes with his queens because of the lust that is so well known in the material world. Although the Lord's pastimes with these women are different from anything in the material world, they superficially seem like the activities of the material world. Thus, although the Lord's pastimes may seem like an ordinary activities, the idea is that he is impelled by lust is refuted here. Right? So these fine elements that they appear, superficially appear. That's why we have to be very careful also, is that, oh, it's just the same. So it superficially appears because it's a medium. So it says that feminine charms, these elements, says the element of the masculinity and the femininity, that interaction. Does that make sense? So in conjugal, it means it's more intimate. Does that make sense? Like the parental, it's seen as intimate, but it's more viewed from one side as closer. Like the children don't necessarily view it that way. They interact that way, but they don't necessarily view it that way. Does that make sense? Well, the conjugal both view it that way. Yeah, it may seem like, but the whole point is it's about exchanging affection. Well, in the material world, then it's about lust. That says the lust that is well known. It's just about lust. It's about what you can, enjoyment you can get out of this interaction, not about what love can be expressed. Does that make sense? That's the weakness. It's different. So therefore, it superficially looks the same. It's not the same at all.
In the queens, their sense of possession of the Lord wasn't common for... I mean, it seems like it's less perfect than in the gopis. Because of this sense of possession.
No, the sense of possession. It means by them having it. No, it will be there, but that possession. See, the thing is okay. The possession is there, but what's the surrender? What's the percentage?
Four.
Husband and wife.
50-50.
Right. Right? You understand? Well, the gopi is the same element of possession, but it's 100%. That's the difference. Right? Well, kubja, attractions to the Lord, but it's about enjoying her senses in connection with the Lord. So it's the least. Right? Then the queens are higher than there. So even though Mathura is higher than Dwarka, but in the conjugal moods of the Mahishis and the queens and the gopis, the Mahishis are on the bottom. Then it goes up. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur further elaborates on the same topic. Although they were the best of women, they could not disturb his senses with their beautiful smiles and glances, endowed with deception to bring him under their control. Because right? This is the whole point. It's not just the expression, but you have these elements of deception, because that means it's more. It's just one is just that happiness to see something's coming, but here is you're controlling it. You're pulling the energies coming in, not going out. Does that make sense? If it's going out, you just think, oh, they're very happy, you know. And they someone asks you, say, yeah, no, they're very happy. This one is that it's going in, so you're always thinking about it. You saw, and then you're always going back to it. You understand?
Yes.
So therefore, the endowed with deception, right? But they say it very nicely.
Yes,
right? Endowed with deception. However, if those glances were endowed with prema, then they could disturb his senses, right? So what they're pointing out is, because it means these other elements, that's what catches his attention. It's because they're endowed with prema. Because they did possess the proper type of love, their glances and smiles were certainly endowed with prema, though it was conjugal prema. They are described, right? So in other words, the conjugal is a detail of prema. Right? It's not the primary element, it's the secondary. Just like we were seeing in Bhav Sadhana, the first stage is the generic prema of Braj. Then the detail is what specific expression of that prema. Does that make sense? Sahaji has turned it the other way around. You start off with, you know, you get your spiritual sarup, and then it's all about you and Krishna. But what about that overall mood of surrender of Braj? Right? Therefore, oh, no, we don't care about, you know, Mother Jashoda and this and that. No, there's a generic surrender that all the Brajvasis can relate to. Then within that, they have their groups. Does that make sense? Yeah.
First. First deserve, then desire.
Yes. They are described in the verse as having prema, and others are described as having deception. In the first case, though the Lord is under the control of his wives, the Lord is still beyond prakriti and gunas of matter, because he is under the control of prema, which is a function of the chit shakti, not material maya. And because their glances and smiles are composed of prema, the love that appears in them and the pastimes of love that arise from that love are all spiritual. It is therefore impossible to say that the Lord has enjoyment of material sense objects, such as material sound and touch. In the second case, because it is impossible for a person without prema to control the Lord, the verse says that his senses cannot at all be disturbed by deception. Right, so you're getting two things at once. This is also the very interesting things how when the acharyas speak, that many times the same verse is describing two things. Right, so he's describing how the Lord can't be controlled by material, these elements of beautiful smiles and glances endowed with deception. He can't be controlled by them. Right? At the same time, is those with prema, then he's controlled by them. Because we see he was acting, reciprocating, acting as their beloved husband. So that means their glances were endued with prema. Right? So he's getting both things are done at once. Therefore, the previous statement, reme, shtri, ratna, kusta, kutasto bhagavan prakrito yata, cannot mean that the Lord is attracted to material enjoyment. One cannot say that the queens are material if sometimes their love-filled glances do not bring the Lord under control, because all the queens belong to the chit-shakti, and none of their glances or smiles can ever be material. Now here he's taking the other thing, in case you say, but then he's going out to work, like he gets up in the morning, right? 3 o'clock, when the cock crows, he gets up. Even though he's in bed with the queens, they would like him to stay longer like that, but he gets up. So then does that mean they don't have the control? So that means they're material? You understand? So that's the thing. When his duty calls, then he's going. So does that mean they don't have him under control? Yes. So you can't say that. Because, and none of their glances or smiles can ever be material. Nor should one say that the Lord is controlled by the general chit-shakti arising from his sarup. He is factually controlled by prema alone. So it's not just the shakti itself. It's the prema manifest by that shakti. Right? Because the chit-shakti is the general principle, but that hladini. So hladini and chit, that's bhakti. Okay. He is actually controlled by prema alone, which is a special function of the chit-shakti. Because here we're taking the chit-shakti as the overall. So all three together, without designation, he's not controlled by that either. It's when the specific function of the chit-shakti, in other words, hladini. Right? From this conclusion, there are no more objections. Right? Because otherwise we can say it's just his internal energy, then it becomes impersonal. No, it's personal. When that manifests, then that's what pleases him. Well, let us agree that the Lord's pastimes with women, so here's a quote here, so he must be Purva Paksha here. Well, let us agree that the Lord's pastimes with women are non-material because the women belong to the Chikshakti. Right? You know, here's a, you know, in other words, beware of the, yes, let us agree. We agree to disagree. You know, all these openings, these are an objection, right? Because the women are non-material because the women belong to the chit-shakti. But he appeared in the material Yadu family in the material world and perceived with his senses material objects such as form and sound belonging to demons like Jarasandha who are material. Right, so he's able to see these things. Right, they're chit-shakti. Okay, he's interacting with him. Great. But he's in the Yadu dynasty, which is the dynasty of the kings that have been coming down. He's seeing the demons and their paraphernalia and all that, which, you know, is coming from the material energy. So we're not talking chit-shakti here. Yes. Therefore, it cannot be denied that he is associated with the gunas. Right? Because our point is therefore, he's not associated with the gunas. But then the point comes is, okay, you know, on that platform, what about all these other things? Right? And then if you can establish that, then you can throw it back to this again. Uh-huh. Therefore, he might be, you know. You understand? This verse answers. The power of the Lord is this. Though situated in Prakriti, he has no contact with the gunas of Prakriti. What are these gunas? They are situated in him. He is situated in the gunas, and the gunas are also situated in him. But he has no contact with the gunas. That's the Lord. The Lord is said to be without gunas, though he's the basis of the whole material realm and the controller of it. Chakshi, Cheta, Kevalo, Nirgunas, Cha. The Lord is the witness, the consciousness, and completely without gunas. Sweta Suvtara Upanishad 6:11. Satvadayo na santishe yatra cha prakrita guna. The material gunas of sattva, rajas, and tamas do not exist in the Lord. Vishnu Purana 1:9:44. Harir hi nirguna sakshat purusha prakrite pura. The Lord is devoid of the gunas, completely beyond prakriti. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:88:5. Right? So now with these three quotes, he's covered everybody. Mm-hmm. Right? With the first quote, the Upanishads, that's going to be your smartas or your maya body. So this kind of level. Who, unless it's backed by Upanishads, okay, nice, it's in all these pastimes, but the ultimate is, in, you know, is impersonal. Because that's what the Upanishads know, but here the Upanishads are saying this. Right? The next is that you're generic, let's say, you know, Hindu scholar and things like that. So they accept all the literature. So then here's Vishnu Purana to get more specific, because they can say, nobody in the Upanishads, you can see it this way and that way. So here's more direct. Then, for the devotees, then the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yes.
It is just like the intelligence of the greatest devotees, which has its object as the Lord, and always remember him. Although the intelligence is situated in Prakriti, and it is situated in the gunas of sattva, rajas, and tamas, while being contented, praising or criticizing. If you're contented, that's the mode of goodness. If you're praising, that's the mode of passion. You're criticizing the mode of ignorance. Yes. Yeah. Maybe, unless you're praising about the spiritual qualities. Mm-hmm. You know. In other words, you know that if they come off, you know how much, you know, it's you know, how we always do this together, and like, okay, what's coming up?
Yeah. Criticizing the spiritual qualities, you can't connect that one.
Yeah, that one gets a little more tough. Because you can criticize the material nature, you know, how, I mean, the material consciousness.
Yeah.
But you don't specific, it's generic. You know, but you don't specifically apply it with the devotee unless they're dependent that you are some way guiding. Other than that, you don't. Okay.
Can you do it for rasa?
Hmm?
Can you do it for rasa?
Yes, material mode of ignorance, rasa. It's popular. It's a big industry. I mean, as we said before, the tabloids, you know, it's just, they make their money off of this, you know, how you say it? Intelligence and the mode of ignorance.
Yeah, that gets your bile going, and then your snacks.
Yeah, and then, yeah, so then the food industry like that, and then what are you going to do with the snacks, because you can't read the paper, so then you need the telly, right, you know, so then you turn on the BBC, and then, you know, so it keeps going, you know, just like that. And then, because you've watched the sports program, now you have to go out again and buy all the, you know, the uniforms and stuff like that, and get your blue or green paint, or, you know, whichever is the appropriate colors. And then you have to do that, you need a car. Yeah, so see, it all works.
I meant spiritually.
Yeah, see, no one ever realized that the whole British economy is working because there's tabloids.
Yes.
While being full or afflicted with hunger and thirst, and while awaking, sleeping, and deep sleep, it is not connected to the gunas because of its indifference to the gunas. In the same way, though the Lord accepts the material objects of the senses, he is not affected by them at all because he is devoid of attachment to them. Right? So the intelligence of the devotee, when it's connected to the Lord, it also functions on the same platform. It's not that it doesn't work with the modes, but it's not controlled by them, because it's devoid of attachment for them. Because you're not trying to gain these results. So the same way as a devotee gets that benefit. So for the Lord, these modes come from him. They are within him, but at the same time we're without. But since they're his, they're expansions of his eternal potency, why can't he see it? You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like that. The point is he owns the whole thing, so why can't he see everything? The point is he's the one that's beyond. The problem is we can't see him, not that he can't see us. You know, that's the... No, because here again we're looking at it from our own point of view. Well, if I can't see him, he can't see me. You know, it's like the guy behind the, in the airport behind that mirror on the wall, right? It's very interesting how in the airports, just before security and all that, they very kindly put all these mirrors up so that you can, adjust yourself, make sure you're all right before you go through, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So you can't see them, but they can see you. Right? That's the whole point. Srila Prabhupada concludes his purports on this chapter as follows. When the Lord descends, he does so along with his entourage to display a complete picture of the transcendental world. Where pure love and devotion for the Lord prevail without any mundane tinge of lording it over the creation of the Lord. So that's what we're introducing all these things. Because now these are fundamental principles. These are like what you could call samanya. Bhakti means these are just your general definitions of bhakti to be able to apply it. Right? So when we're dealing with rasa, these are just the fundamental principles. Then we can appreciate Krishna's pastimes with the devotees. Right? So these are just establishing. So we've shown how the Lord protects, how he interacts, he takes care of the devotees. He comes, descends to interact with the devotees. But now we see the quality of that interaction based on that pure love, right?
And he's not exploitative?
Yeah, he's not exploitative. But what's to exploit? It's all his anyway.
Yes.
And it is him. It's not like us where we say it's ours, but it's not. Such devotees of the Lord are all liberated souls, perfect representations of the marginal or internal potency, in complete negation of the influence of the external potency. Right? So, perfect representations of the marginal or internal, right? Not like us. Not so perfect representations. The wives of Lord Krishna were made to forget the immeasurable glories of the Lord by the internal potency, so that there might not be any flaw of exchange. Right. And they took it for granted that the Lord was a henpecked husband, always following them in lonely places. Right. In other words, even the personal associates of the Lord do not know him perfectly well. So what do the thesis writers or mental speculators know about the transcendental glories of the Lord? Wow. Thesis writers.
Thesis writers.
Wow, I'm impressed. Oh, you're one of those writers of theses.
Yes. Theses.
Oh, you're a thesisist.
Yes.
Okay, yes. Yeah, okay. So, nobody knows him perfectly well. And these are the ones that out of affection, then he's interacting.
Yes.
Like that. Okay. The mental speculators present different theses as to his becoming the cause of creation, the ingredients of creation, or the material and efficient causes of the creation, etc. But all this is but partial knowledge about the Lord. Right? So they're catching something. Otherwise, where would they base it on? There has to be something, some experiential, or taking it from Shastra, some aspect that they're taking it from. They're hearing from someone else, so some authority. But they're only getting partial. So they're always dealing with some aspect of knowledge. Otherwise, why is it something you can discuss? But ultimately, it doesn't work. Right? Factually, they are as ignorant as the common man. Right? The common man doesn't know. They don't know. The Lord can be known by the mercy of the Lord only and by no other means. But since the dealings of the Lord with his wives are based on pure transcendental love and devotion, the wives are all on the transcendental plane without material contamination. So they're transcendental, and they know the Lord how much is needed to be known to work in that rasa.
Yes.
That's all the more you need, right?
Yes.
Does that make sense? So, just like in Vaikuntha, they know the glories of the Lord, but they don't necessarily know the intimacy of the Lord. Right? And in Goloka, they know the intimacy, but not necessarily that extent of the glories. So there's always going to be something that's not known. Because Shakti can only know Shaktiman to a certain degree. Okay, so that ends this chapter. I like this. Essay question. It takes up half a page. Yes. Oh no, it keeps going on to the next page. Yeah, even better. Yeah, okay. You didn't see that?
No, I saw the
question is longer than the essay.
Yeah. Page 50, chapter 12, Birth of Emperor Parikshit. Pratigya. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:12, 7 through 12 and 30. O son of Bhrigu, Shonaka, when the child Parikshit, the great fighter, was in the womb of his mother, Uttara, and was suffering from the burning heat of the Brahmastra thrown by Ashwatthama, he could observe the Supreme Lord coming to him. He, the Lord, was only thumb high, but he was all transcendental. He had a very beautiful, blackish, infallible body, and he wore a dress of lightning yellow and helmet of blazing gold. Thus he was seen by the child. The Lord was enriched with four hands, earrings of molten gold, and had eyes blood red with fury. As he loitered about, his club constantly encircled him like a shooting star. The Lord was thus engaged in vanquishing the radiation of the Brahmastra. Just as the sun evaporates a drop of dew, he was observed by the child, who thought about who he was. While thus being observed by the child, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul of everyone, the protector of the righteous, who stretches in all directions and who is unlimited by time and space, disappeared at once. Thereupon, when all the good signs of the zodiac gradually evolved, the heir apparent of Pandu, who would be exactly like him in prowess, took birth. So his son would become famous in the world as Parikshit, examiner, because he would come to examine all human beings in his search after that personality whom he saw before his birth. Thus, he would come to constantly contemplate him. From the purport to 1:12:30. Child Parikshit, after coming out of the womb, was in the habit of examining everyone to see whether he was the same personality whom he first saw in the womb. But no one could be equal to or more attractive than the Lord, and therefore he never accepted anyone. But the Lord was constantly with him by such examination. And thus Maharaj Parikshit was always engaged in the devotional service of the Lord by remembrance. Srila Jiva Goswami, right, because he was remembering the Lord and then comparing to everybody else, he was always engaged in devotional service remembering the Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami remarks in this connection that every child, if given an impression of the Lord from his very childhood, certainly becomes a great devotee of the Lord like Maharaj Parikshit. One may not be as fortunate as Maharaj Parikshit to have the opportunity to see the Lord in the womb of his mother, but even if he is not so fortunate, he can be made so if the parents of the child desire him to be so. There is a practical example in my personal life in this connection. My father was a pure devotee of the Lord, and when I was only 4 or 5 years old, my father gave me a couple of forms of Radha and Krishna. In a playful manner, I used to worship these deities along with my sister. I used to imitate the performances of a neighboring temple of Radha Govinda. By constantly visiting this neighboring temple and copying the ceremonies in connection with my own deities of play, I developed a natural affinity for the Lord. My father used to observe all the ceremonies befitting my position. Later on, these activities were suspended due to my association in the schools and colleges, and I became completely out of practice. But in my youthful days, when I met my spiritual master, Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, again I revived my old habit, and the same playful deities became my worshipable deities in proper regulation. This was followed up until I left the family connection. And I am pleased that my generous father gave the first impressions, which was developed later into regulated devotional service by his divine grace. Maharaj Pallad also advised that such impressions of a godly relation must be impregnated from the beginning of childhood. Otherwise, one may miss the opportunity of the human form of life, which is very valuable, although it is temporary like others. So you have from this beginning, if that impression is there, that will carry on throughout the life, even if there's something in between. You know, that's the whole idea. We say in the Vedic cultures that these kind of impressions are given when one is young, right? Then you know, so that later on that devotional, when one gets serious, one practices. Or like we see the brahmachari, he gets that kind of impression, and then later on in life he can fall back on that kind of thing. So the whole idea is that these early impressions then are very good, right? Very important, because they increase the remembrance of the Lord. The whole idea is, if you have good impressions, you remember the Lord. Bad impressions, you remember what's not about the Lord. Yes?
How Maharaj Parikshit saw in the womb, is it found in that form?
I said Prishnagarbha. This is a form of Vishnu. It's a Vishnu working. It's Prishnagarbha.
Oh, why did he see that specific form? That was his attraction?
No, it was Prishnagarbha who drew Marasa. Drew Marasa Prishnagarbha. Yeah, no, it's just that's because he's dealing with you know, the Brahmastra and everything, so therefore Vishnu form is your natural form. Okay.
Just business?
Yeah, it's just business. You know, it's his office form. Right? But he's just as attractive. It's just that it doesn't have the sweetness, but the, you know, still the same person. You know, and Parikit's a king, so therefore it's also all that niceness, opulence and everything, because it's mentioning all the things that the child saw. The child noticed these things, you know, so the blood red eyes, the molten gold earrings, you know, the four hands, the lightning yellow dhoti and helmet of blazing gold, right, blackish color, very beautiful, like that. So he saw these things. Chapter 12 summarizes questions and answers. Question 16 of Srimad Bhagavatam is asked by Shonaka of Sutta. It is about the glorious birth and death of Maharaj Parikit. Shonaka asks it in two parts. Right? So that's the difference, like to say, in some of the cultures, not so many, but like in Japanese or that the older culture, then it was a question of how did someone die, because that was considered the glory. But in the Vedic, you have that, plus you have the birth. Because right? In these other cultures, the birth isn't necessarily so glorious, right? Question 16, part 1. How was the great Emperor Parikit, who was a highly intelligent and great devotee, born in that womb? 112.2. Answer. The first part of the question 16 is specifically answered in verses 7 through 17. The answer is summarized philosophically thus by Srila Prabhupada. It is said in the Brahma Samhita, chapter 5, that the Supreme Lord Govinda, by his one planarian portion, enters into the halo of the universe and distributes himself as Paramatma, or the Supersoul, not only within the heart of every living being, but also within every atom of the material elements. Thus, the Lord is all-pervading by his inconceivable potency, and thus he entered the womb of Uttara to save his beloved devotee, Maharaj Parikit. In the Bhagavad Gita 9.31, the Lord assured everyone that his devotees are never to be vanquished. No one can kill a devotee of the Lord because he is protected by the Lord, and no one can save a person whom the Lord desires to kill. The Lord is all-powerful, and therefore he can both save and kill as he likes. He became visible to his devotee Maharaj Parikit, even in that awkward position of the womb of his mother, in a shape just suitable for his vision. Right, so that's the point. Just suitable for his vision. Right, so, maybe it's dark there, so anything gold and shiny is going to be noticed. Right? 112.9, third point. Question 16, part 2. How did his death take place? And what did he achieve after his death? 112.2. Answer. The second part of the question 16 is specifically answered in verses 27 and 28. The answer is philosophically summarized thus by Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Parikit, being especially attached to the Lord from the beginning of his body in the womb of his mother, was continuously under the shelter of the Lord. And the so-called warning of his death within 7 days from the date of the curse of the Brahmana's son was a boon to him to enable him to prepare himself to go back home, back to Godhead. Since he was always protected by the Lord, he could have avoided the effect of such a curse by the grace of the Lord. But he did not take such undue advantage for nothing. Rather, he made the best use of a bad bargain. Right? In other words, he could have, just because he's a pure devotee, he's way more powerful than Takshaka. So there's no question that he couldn't have reversed it. But he took it as the Lord's special mercy, and so because of this, the Bhagavatam is spoken. Yes. So made the best use of a bad bargain means that's as good as it gets. How to best use a bad bargain, that's top of the line in the material world. Right? For 7 days continuously, he heard Srimad Bhagavatam from the right source. And thus he got shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord by that opportunity. 1.12.28 purport. As Sutta answers question 16, he relates a question of my Maharaj Yudhishthira to the Brahmanas, conducting the birth ceremony of Maharaj Parikshit. This question 17 of Srimad Bhagavatam is answered within the answer to question 16. Question 17. Will Parikshit become as saintly a king, as pious in his very name, and as famous and glorified in his achievements as others who appeared in this great royal family? 1.12.18. Answer. The significance of question 17 is that in the previous question, the sages ask about Parikshit's birth and death, but here Maharaj Yudhishthira inserts a query about his Parikshit's life, right? Because you have birth and death. So now here's the question of in between.
Yes.
Verses 19 through 26 present a summary of King Parikshit's life in answer to question 17. That answer is philosophically summarized here by Srila Prabhupada. In the line of royal succession in the family of Maharaj Yudhishthira, all the kings without exception were the wisest men of their times. And so also it is foretold about Maharaj Parikshit and his son Maharaj Janamejaya, who was yet to be born. Such wise kings can become chastisers of upstarts and uprooters of Kali or quarrelsome elements. But so in other words, it's not that, oh, it's Kali Yuga, that's the way it is. It's they uproot these things. Yeah. So you either uproot it by administrative, by preaching, by teaching, by your own personal practices. That's then, you know, those who are glorious. Right? So will he become as saintly a king? Right? Because we have to remember, is here, Parikshit met Kali Raj personally, right? And so instead of personally, well, it is your age, and you know, kind of like, hey, you know, he didn't do that. As will be clear in the chapters ahead, Maharaj Parikshit wanted to kill the personified Kali, who was attempting to kill a cow, the emblem of peace and religion. The symptoms of Kali are 1. Wine, 2. Women, 3. Gambling, and 4. Slaughterhouses. Wise rulers of all states should take lessons from Maharaj Parikshit in how to maintain peace and morality by subduing the upstarts and quarrelsome people who indulge in wine, illicit connection with women, gambling, and meat-eating supplied by regularly maintained slaughterhouses. In this age of Kali, regular license is issued for maintaining all of these departments of quarrel. So how can they expect peace and morality in the state? Right? Because these are all, because wine, you have to have a special license, but you get a license, right? You know, for prostitution, you get a license. Gambling, you get a license. Slaughterhouse, you get a license. You know, because all of them bring in big revenue.
Yes.
I mean, the biggest revenue coming into the state basically is this. From the, you know, the smallest range of people, it gives the biggest revenue. Like that. So how can they expect peace and morality in the state? The state fathers, therefore, must follow the principles of becoming wiser by devotion to the Lord, by chastising the breaker of discipline, and by uprooting the symptoms of quarrel, as mentioned above. Right? So, in other words, they should practice devotion, see that that's expanding. They should see that those who are breaking the rules are chastised, and the roots of these, you know, these four regulative principles that are going to serve everything, these are kept in check. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like that. Yeah. Yes. Adhyaya Prakashita. One can say, oh, people will do this anyway. But the point is then it's not organized. It makes it more difficult. It becomes restricted in any case. Right? That's one thing. So just by it's not being authorized, it becomes restricted. Then two, by your personal example and by association of saintly persons, then you see the reason for it not being there, it becomes reduced even more. And if you chastise those who are breaking these principles, you know, those who are making trouble like this, then it reduces the encouragement of the common person.
Yes. Maybe even their karmic reactions will be less.
Yes, I mean, of course, you have, means the element of the mediating is still going to be there, but when it's organized, you're dealing with much greater karma.
Yes.
Right? Because it's just like, here, the person has an animal, they kill the animal, but it's one animal. Right? And nowadays, everything is all mixed. You know, you have so many animals, and so you're dealing in a much greater sinful involvement, you know, especially if you're into hamburgers.
Yes.
Right? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Adhyaya Prakashika. 12th chapter describes how Maharaj Yudhishthira celebrated the birth of Parikit and heard his future from the lives of the Brahmins. Right? In other words, the outstanding point of the chapter is Parikit Maharaj's birth. His life and his death, and all of them, the essential point is he's remembering the Lord. That's what's outstanding, right? Yes. Right. The storyline then is this, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's just like the devotion is expressed through activity. So the storyline, that's the Adhyaya Prakashika. What the essence is being explained, that is the Pratigya. The 12th chapter describes how Maharaj Yudhishthira celebrated the birth of Parikit and heard his future life from the Brahmanas. No one had ever heard of such a devotional king who saw Krishna when he was in the womb and punished Kali. But you don't hear of any other king punishing Kali. Right? You hear of kings dealing with, but you don't hear of them, you know. Like, how many do you hear of having personal dealings with Kali? Right? You hear of Parikit? And you hear of Nala. But Nala was controlled by Kali. But Parikit was controlling Kali. Right? And then who sees Krishna in the womb? We don't hear of any other person like that. Right? So very special. The sages in Naimisharanya turn their questions back to topics about Maharaj Parikit. Śrīla Gosvāmī first explains the glories of Maharaj Yudhishthira and the glories of Maharaj Yudhishthira's reign over the earth. Sutta then explains the vision of the Lord that Parikit saw while still in the womb. Sutta narrates the birth of Parikit and Yudhishthira's observance of Parikit's birth ceremony, which was attended by learned Brahmins who described the Lord's protection of Parikit. Right? So again here, protection, because that's the special thing. Maintenance is the general creation, but protection is the special maintenance of the devotees. Right? So again we see Poshanam. In answer to Yudhishthira's inquiry about how Parikit will compare to his ancestors, the Brahmanas glorify the future qualities of Parikit. The Brahmanas finally describe the future death of Parikit and then, after being sufficiently remunerated, return home. Right, sufficiently, not just they were remunerated.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks for coming. Drop in any time. Parikit grows and his qualities develop under Yudhishthira's guardianship. Yudhishthira decides to perform a sacrifice to atone for his own sins. His brothers collect the needed money, and Yudhishthira performs the sacrifice in the presence of Lord Krishna. Following the sacrifice, Arjuna returns to Hastinapur with Krishna. Shloka Anusharana. Summary verses. Verses 1 to 11, inquiry about Maharaj Parikit. Verses 12 to 29, the Brahmin's predictions about Maharaj Parikit. In verses 30 to 36, Maharaj Yudhishthira performs a sacrifice. Verses 1 to 11, inquiring about Maharaj Parikit. In verses 1 through 11, the sages of Naimisharanya turn their questions back to topics about Maharaj Parikit. Śrīla Gosvāmī first describes the glories of Maharaj Parikit's reign over the earth and the vision of the Lord that Parikit saw while still within the womb. The previous chapters, 7 through 11, and describe Krishna's loving dealings with exalted devotees. To attain such an advanced level of consciousness, especially on a social level, One needs the assistance of the Varnashram system, which requires a qualified ruler to maintain it. Therefore, the Bhagavatam will now, in chapters 12 and 16 and 17, describe the qualities and activities of an ideal Vaishnava king. Because it mentioned before that point that the Varnashram system is the system through which you express your love for Krishna. So the point is if it's the system to express love for Krishna, and if in the present day you can express your love for Krishna, that means the medium of expression is still valid.
Yes.
Right? You understand? If your point is your purpose is not to express your love for Krishna, right? Then you can have a shot at saying that, well, therefore the Varnashram system is not, you know, relevant in this particular time. Right? But in actuality, we still could, because pious works get pious results. So you can still, it's still the Lord's laws of nature. But if your point is impious activities, then of course the Varnashram system, which comprises pious activities, would be unideal.
Yes.
Therefore, if one wants to maintain the modern lifestyle, then yes, the Varnashram system is not the system for you. You understand? The actual logic that's there. So this other stuff is presented as seemingly nice, but it's actually completely bogus. Right? Does that make sense? You have to know what is the Varnashram system, which means Daiva Varnashram, how to remember the Lord in all situations. Right? Yes. Yeah.
As it says also, to attain such advanced level of consciousness, then one is required. So for advanced consciousness, then Daiva Varnashram.
Yes, it's required. Means you can do it as a Paramahamsa. If you want to say, okay, we don't require it, then you have to take up the lifestyle of a Paramahamsa. So that means right there is the first point, no family life. Because Paramahamsas and family generally aren't seen together, right? We do have Paramahamsa, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, family life, but he's showing exemplarily how to follow Varnashram and Krishna service. But otherwise, then, you know, Vamsidas Babaji, now that's your man. You know?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So the point is it's not a matter of that. So as Prabhupada, how he's given it to us, that can be followed. You know, we're not talking about big yajnas and this and that, you know. We're talking about just straightforward stuff, the main essentials of the system. That can be followed.
Now we know why Vamsi Bhavan was created. Vamsi Bhavan, this accommodation in my
to point. Play flutes.
No, so that they can fill it up with Vamsi Das.
Oh, I see. Okay, yes.
Okay. Practitioners.
Okay, yes. Otherwise known as Paramahamsa Bhavan.
Yes.
Okay.
It's always crazy in there.
Yes, okay. I've been inside.
He stays there.
Oh. Okay.
He doesn't like to brag, but that was out.
Oh, okay. That's sad. Okay. Paramahamsas. Okay, so that's why it now describes a king. Right, because the king then maintains the system. Administration maintains the system. Right, so the Brahmins live and preach, and the Kshatriyas live and enforce.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
In this way, Suta Goswami will also reply to another of Shonaka Rishi's questions. It is said that Maharaj Parikit is a great first-class devotee of the Lord, and that his birth and activities are all wonderful. Please tell us about him. 149. Srila Prabhupada's first purport to chapter 12 sets the scene. The sages assemble in the forest of Naimisharanya, inquired from Suta Goswami about the birth of Maharaj Parikit. But in the course of the narration, other topics like the release of the Brahmastra by the son of Drona, his punishment by Arjuna, Queen Kunti's prayers, the Pandavas' visit to the palace where Bhishma Dev was lying, his prayers and thereafter the Lord's departure for Dwarka were discussed, right? Because it opens with Uttara. But then how that happened, then it goes back to the Ashutama, and then the whole thing, and then that takes on. So then Krishna was, having done all this, was now ready to leave at Yudhishthira's, right? So now again, it goes back to, right? Does that make sense? So that's why the conversation element is important, because it's moving according to that.
Yes.
That's the uniqueness of the Puranas, is that it can move like that, how the mind does.
Yes.
While the Upanishads don't. They just take you through logical points like this, and you catch them. You know, it's just like, I mean, it's when we're talking about let's say, these verses that we're quoting from the Upanishads, right? We take them in Sanskrit, or, you know, even if you put a translation, probably the Taittiriya Upanishad, which so many of the quotes come from, right? You put the whole thing, the first three chapters, where all these verses are found, it would take up three, four, five pages. But in that, you're getting the volume of philosophical information is so great. Right? So that's the difference. Well, in the Purana, then it takes a point, shows the story, shows how it unfolds. So it makes it much more useful. Yes?
Can we say this is stream of liberated consciousness?
Stream of liberated consciousness. Yes, but it's logical.
Okay. Yeah,
but you have to say the other one is logical also, because you would pick like three letters, and then all the names are based on those letters. So yeah, you do have some logic there.
Misapplied logic.
Yes, very much. His arrival at Dwarka and residing with 16,000 queens. Oh no, we only got up to... the Pandavas' visit to the place where Bhishma Dev was lying. His prayers and thereafter the Lord's departure for Dwarka were discussed. His arrival at Dwarka and residing with the 16,000 queens, etc., were narrated. The sages were absorbed in hearing such descriptions, but now they wanted to turn to the original topic, and thus the inquiry was made by Shonaka Rishi. So the subject of the release of the Brahmastra weapon by Ashwatthama is renewed. Shonaka Rishi is curious to hear from Sudha Goswami about the valiant and highly devoted King Parikit, whom Lord Krishna saved while the king was yet within the womb of his mother, Uttara. Verses 1 through 3, footnote 24. The details of Shonaka's questions and Sudha's answers were explained in the previous section. Sutta begins his reply by glorifying the post-Kurukshetra reign of Yudhishthira Maharaj over planet Earth, which was admired even by the denizens of heaven. Because he was absorbed in the service of the Lord, nothing can satisfy him except the Lord's service. So it's not that he's running a big kingdom. That's just his service. So he's satisfied because of service, not because he's emperor of the world. So that was the whole point, is before was... he can remember the Lord, be absorbed in the Lord without being an emperor. Right? But the point was, is he's supposed to express his devotion through that emperorship. Okay. That was the point. In his purport to 1.12.4, Srila Prabhupada describes Yudhishthira Maharaja's mood while ruling the earth. A father is always a father because he always has the good of the son at heart. The father wants every one of his sons to become a better man than himself. Therefore, a king like Maharaj Yudhishthira, who was the personality of goodness, wanted everyone under his administration, especially human beings who have better developed consciousness, to become devotees of Lord Krishna, so that everyone can become free from the trifles of material existence. Right, so, just it means like the emperor or the king is like the father of the citizens. Right, so this point of... you could say the father always has the good of the son at heart. Now one may ask, well, what if he doesn't? Then he's not a father. To that degree he does, to that degree he is. To that degree he doesn't, to that degree he's not. So those who are exploited, they're not fathers. That's why they're not supposed to be administrators. Therefore, so-called, or unwanted administrators, as Prabhupada mentioned. And his motto of administration was all good for the citizens. All good.
It's all good.
Yeah, all good for the citizens. For as personified goodness, he knew perfectly well what is actually good for them. That's the point. As personified goodness, he knew perfectly well what is actually good for them. So it's the point is you have to. It's all about the citizens, but you actually have to know what is good for the citizens, because it's of the people, by the people, for the people. Then for the people is fine, you know. the only question comes is of the people and by the people, is there an understanding of the standard that required? If there is, great. But if there's not, that's where it's going to fall apart.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And then by the people, why the people have to do it themselves? It means the king should be taking care. It means they should be doing their duties, of course. But the administration should be done by administrators. You know, the means. Does that make sense? They vote for them, but the point is they have to do it. They should be taking care of it. To conduct the administration on that principle and not on the Rakshasi, demoniac principle of sense gratification. As an ideal king, he had no personal ambition. Right? So let's say, like we were saying before in the previous point, prohibition. That was brought about because it was bad for the people. Why it was, how you say it? Repealed. Is because, well, people were absorbed in sense gratification anyway. They're going to do it anyway. You understand? It wasn't repealed by, well, actually it's not so bad for the people.
Yes.
So in other words, it was established on a proper principle, but it was repealed on a principle of sense gratification. As an ideal king, he had no personal ambition. And there was no place for sense gratification because all the senses at all times were engaged in the loving service of the Lord. So he may be using the facilities, but they were all used in devotional service, which includes the partial service to the living beings who form the parts and parcels of the complete whole. So he has to see that they're taken care of. So in other words, his senses and the element that one might consider as extended sense gratification, it was all taken care of, but within devotional service. It wasn't dealt with as his own personal, you know, hey, I am the king, you know, we get a little something here, or, you know, that's natural, and everybody laughs and goes, yeah, yeah, you know, like that, or, you know, hey, no, we have to, the people and this and that and all these kind of is. No, it was that devotional service, he took care of everyone. He's taken care of, he's engaging his senses in the Lord's service, and he's taken care of the parts of the living beings in the kingdom, because they're parts and parcels of the Lord. Right? So therefore, that's all taken care of. So the form of that will be Dharma. Right? But he's doing that as devotion. Right? To do that, you have to be detached from the material world. So moksha is included. So if you have bhakti, Dharma, Artha, Kama, and moksha are automatically covered. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains. 3:4-6 describe Yudhishthira in order to indicate that the cause of attaining such a grandson was his attachment to Krishna. But otherwise, he could have come at another time. But why did he come at this time? Because Yudhishthira, he was so much nicely attached to Krishna and doing everything in connection to Krishna. So he got a grandson who, from within the womb, was remembering, seeing the Lord and remembering the Lord. Because right, it didn't just say he just saw the Lord, you know, but he was trying to understand who he was contemplating the Lord, right? That was the point. So then when he appeared, then that's all he was doing, you know. Who was that? In chapter 8 of this canto, right? So in other words, you're Krishna conscious, then the kids are Krishna conscious, right? How you say? Let's remember the saying, the apple does not fall very far from the tree.
Yes.
People don't like to hear it, but hey. In chapter 8, it means that the sun's going good. Yeah, the apple doesn't fall, you know, like that. The sun's a bozo. Well, the apple doesn't fall very far.
What do you mean?
But yeah, that's the point.
It's Kali Yuga.
You know?
If he's fallen far, then it's Kali Yuga.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see. Oh, he's fallen farther. So we're okay, just the kids fall a little bit farther. Okay, yeah. No, but in Kali Yuga, the trees are getting shorter.
Yeah, it almost worked.
In chapter 8 of this canto, Sudha Goswami related Ashwatthama's launching of a Brahmastra against Parikit, grandson of Arjuna, by Abhimanyu and Uttara. At the same time, the prince was yet within his mother's womb. Without repeating that account, the sage now speaks of Parikit's response to this danger. Right. So here it mentions such a grandson to Krishna. Right? How Yudhishthira is, because here all the four brothers are working together, so if someone has a son, they all have a son. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's the thing. That's family.
That's
yeah. As Parikit suffered the scorching heat of Ashwatthama's fiery astra, as it sought him out within his mother's womb. He attentively marked the Supreme Lord coming to his rescue. Srila Prabhupada points out, even in that helpless condition, the child Parikit endured the unbearable temperature due to his being a great fighter by nature. Right, you know. So he was enduring that. Then he was, you know, could focus on the Lord. Otherwise, in that heat, why would he remember the Lord? So that also shows how great of a devotee he was. You know, just like Bhishma Dev. How in that condition he can remember the Lord. So the same way Parikit had to be a great devotee. Otherwise, how would he remember the Lord in that condition? You know, and we see is that in that condition, it's the Kshatriyas who will do that. We don't see examples like this, Brahmins in that. Right, so the Lord's pastimes, he does this with the devotees who are in the pastime as Kshatriyas. Then they have this kind of position. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes.
But Sudama, he was able to tolerate the impoverished condition.
That's impoverished, but it's not really necessarily a physically, aggressively physically. It's just lack of facility. It's not that you have, you know, things bothering you. Yeah. You know, so there's a difference. That's what Prabhupada says. It's not uncomfortable. So in other words, for him, that poverty was not uncomfortable. Yes. So that's why he was living at it. If it was uncomfortable, he wouldn't have done it.
Yes.
Right. Yes. Like that. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, because of his natural courage, he was not afraid of the fire of the weapon. His first perception of objects by his mental eyes was the form of the Lord.
Sure.
Right? So this thing of fearlessness and it's just they're not afraid. It's just you deal with it. That's all. You know, it's happening, it's coming, you deal with it. That's the okay, so enter.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura.